Chapter 13. Owen. The dying embers of the coals smolder before me, warming my face as the eastern horizon gradually brightens with the coming dawn. Around me the sleeping forms of our group, several men fewer than it had been when we left Tarsus, huddled beneath their blankets for warmth. My restless mind prevented me from falling into a deep sleep, so I had relieved the guard standing watch so that he could get some rest. The latter half of the night passed slowly and quietly, for which I'm still grateful. With the recent events, the time alone was a welcome relief. Elias, who would have usually taken first watch, sleeps in the middle of our camp, surrounded by guards. The king's men don't trust him, and the soldier I replaced had impressed upon me to keep an eye on him before going to bed. Apparently they fear he'll abandon us in the middle of the night, leaving us without a guide to Dunmar City. I snort and spit into the fire pit, my saliva sizzling on the bed of coals. To be honest, I'm not sure what to believe anymore, or what my place is on this mission. The king's directive makes sense on the surface. Peace with the Nightingales is the only way to have a united front against the demons. However, Elias's betrayal still weighs heavy on my soul, making me question everything he has ever taught me as a ranger. He always said that he knew my father, that they served together when they were young rangers. But for all I know, he could have been lying about that as well. Could it be possible that Elias was the Nightingale who killed my father? Does he at least have knowledge of the murder? Perhaps the two of them were friends. Dark thoughts, to be sure, but right now I find it difficult to think about anything else. Zara snores softly to my left, and as I glance over at her, I find the tension in my shoulders easing somewhat. She seems so peaceful sleeping there, beautiful even while in the midst of her dreams. Light, what I wouldn't give to have her level of control, her self-assured and confident outlook on life. If anything, I'm grateful that she and Talon are accompanying me on this bizarre journey. Their companionship provides me with a welcome distraction from being in the presence of my former master. Thank the light I'm not alone in all of this. Eventually the sun crests the horizon, bathing the land in a light that gradually grows from red-orange to cerulean. Rubbing my hands together, I stand up from where I sit by the fire and begin the process of waking everyone up, pointedly staying far away from Elias. It isn't long until the camp is filled with the sounds of yawns and groans, as our smaller group starts pulling themselves out of their bedrolls. We eat a plain breakfast of bread, jerky, and fruit, washed down with tea boiled over the coals. There seems to be a pall among us as we prepare to resume our journey, the events of the previous day apparently hanging in our collective thoughts. I find myself content to brood just like everyone else. Untethering the horses from the spikes we had driven into the ground, we mount up and return to the road, heading north, our breath steaming in front of our faces. The day drags on without further incidents. No more demons attack us from the air or the land. Horses plodding, wind blowing, we cross the heartlands at a crawl, the great snow-capped peaks of the Ironback Mountains looming before us as we draw near. During the ride, Talon, Zara, and I make conversation, talking about our backgrounds and musing over our destination. For the most part, though, we ride in silence, shivering within our cloaks as the autumn wind seeps into our bones. The road leads us ever northward, cutting a path through the heartlands and into gradually higher elevations. The hills around us grow larger, and soon we are surrounded by rugged hinterlands, thick with stands of ironback pine. The air carries a bite that's harsher than in the heartlands, and everywhere I look, there are possible ambush sites, copses and crags that can potentially house demons or nightingales. As nightfall draws near, we come to one of the greater towns in the region, known as Omkirk, a settlement nestled into the foothills of the mountains, beside one of the tributaries leading into the River Blackwater. Our troop enters the gates of the town, the squat stone walls protecting the thatch-roofed buildings settled on the banks of the river. The guards immediately recognize the king's colors and let us through, not even questioning who we are or why we are here. Rollo's takes point ahead of Elias, leads us to the town square, pulling up in front of a cozy-looking inn built between two large buildings. The light emanating from within, as well as the fragrant smoke rising from the chimney, gives the place an inviting feel. As we dismount in front of a side stable, a pair of handlers comes out and takes our reins, guiding our horses inside. The ten of us filter through the front door of the inn, warm air and the smells of food greeting us pleasantly. The common room is about half full, and several empty tables stand waiting for us to sit down and relax. After the deaths of several of their fellows, the soldiers are more subdued as they settle into their seats, their eyes haunted after having fought actual demons. Even if they were to speak of their experience with the other patrons of the inn, I doubt anyone would believe them. The three of us pick a table next to the hearth, Zara sitting next to me and Talon across from us. Fortunately, the meal provided is delicious. Generous cuts of pork, slathered in gravy, cooked vegetables, and onion soup. Loaves of fragrant bread are set out on each of the tables, and pitchers of mulled wine are brought over, condensation beating on their pewter surfaces. After a few minutes of digging into the feast, the mood starts to grow lighter, the conversation a bit more lively. "Burning hells," Talon mutters, chewing a big bite with his mouth open. "I always heard that Omkirk's pork was the best in the kingdom, but I never thought they would taste this good." Eating more primly, Zara glances over at him and makes a disgusted sound. "You could at least close your mouth when you eat," she says, using her fork and knife to cut off a thin slice of meat. "Actually, you should probably keep it shut when you're not eating as well." "Ha ha," he replies sarcastically after swallowing his food. "We're not in your fancy city anymore, mage. Out here we eat like rangers." He promptly picks up his bowl of soup and begins slurping noisily, causing Zara to grimace once more. I listen to their banter with only half an ear, subtly peering over at Elias whenever I'm sure that he isn't looking. The man sits alone at a far table, hunched over his food and eating like a wolf, hungrily but always alert to danger. The barmaids and other patrons give him a wide berth even though he's weaponless. He stares intently forward with an unreadable look in his eyes, his furrowed brow indicating that he's deep in thought. I wonder what he's thinking about. Probably trying to figure out a way to escape and warn the nightingales that were coming. Chewing mechanically, I realize that Zara and Talon have already finished their plates. Both of them eye me uncertainly, as if neither of them are sure of what to say to me. Leaning back in my chair, I force a smile. "It isn't very late," I say, trying to appear as though nothing is bothering me. "Do you two want to play cards or something?" They both glance at each other, almost as if they are having some unspoken conversation, before Talon reluctantly shakes his head. "I overheard the soldiers saying they were going to get some games of dice going. I think I'm going to try and earn a little extra coin." He stands up, stretching and letting out a loud belch. Zara rolls her eyes in disgust. "I'll leave the two of you be," he says with a smirk. He walks over to one of the soldiers' tables, and sure enough, they are preparing a game of dice. For a moment, Zara and I sit there in silence, the hushed conversations of the others in the common room washing over us. Then, after a moment, she perks up, nodding to the front door. "It feels rather stuffy in here," she says, brown eyes connecting meaningfully with mine. "Want to go out and get some fresh air?" Part of me, the denser, more practical side, wants to point out that we've already been outside all day, and that evenings in the mountains can be particularly cold. Fortunately, the other, more sociable side of my brain picks up on the subtle meaning of her words. "Sure," I reply, pushing my chair back and standing up. "That sounds nice." Pulling her robes tightly around herself, she follows me to the front door and I push it open, stepping out into the town square of Omkirk. As expected, the air is uncomfortably cold. The town's proximity to the mountains and higher elevation give it a frigid climate in the colder months, and I see my breath puffing out in front of my face as I breathe. Together we walk out in front of the inn, stepping on the cobbles and making our way to the town center just ahead of us, stars and street lamps alight. A wide pool of crystal-clear water rests in the middle of the square, roped off and encircled by a low brick wall. Steam rises lazily from the water, wafting into the air and dissipating above our heads, making the area around the pool warmer and muggier than the rest of the town. A small bronze plaque set into the stone reads, "The Hot Spring of Ohmkirk, from the depths of Bihalia." "A hot spring," I say, stepping up to the pool and looking into it. I can see the stones beneath almost perfectly, and in the middle of the pool there is a deep rift that descends into infinite blackness, bubbles floating up from the depths. I've heard of these things before. They're supposed to be pretty common here in the north. "It's said that hot springs like this allowed the early settlers of this region to thrive," she replies thoughtfully, joining me beside the rope barrier. "I'd wager that Ohmkirk was built up around this little pool, a source of good luck as much as a source of clean, hot water." "I wonder if anyone bathes in it," I think out loud. "In weather like this, it's got to be pretty tempting." "Only if you're tempted to have your skin scalded off," she replies lightly. "That water is practically boiling." We stand quietly for a few minutes, watching as the steam rises from the water's surface and disappears into the sky. A few townsfolk walk through the square, but the temperature and the late hour keep most of the town's occupants indoors. The sun has already sunk beneath the horizon, bathing the mountainous foothills in near impenetrable darkness. "I'm worried about you, you know," she says, glancing over at me. "I can see how this mission is affecting you. Elias coming back has taken us all by surprise, but you? I can tell that his return has really hurt you." I hold her gaze for a long moment before looking away with a sigh. The humid vapors of the hot spring billow around us, warming our cheeks and creating a screen that obscures the lamplight. "He betrayed me, Zara," I reply, looking down at the rippling water before us. "He lied about who he was and abandoned me to fend for myself." Oddly enough, I find that I'm not embarrassed by my vulnerability, and I'm comfortable opening up to her. "I know it feels that way, but he still cares about you." She reaches over and places her hand on mine. Though her fingers are icy to the touch, the gesture is comforting. "I can tell by the way he looks at you that he still has your best interests at heart. He desperately wants to let you in." "Then what should I do?" I ask, honestly seeking out an answer. "Should I just forget that he has been lying to me this entire time? That he's secretly been a part of the very organization that murdered my father?" "No," she says. "No, something like that would be impossible to forget, even with time." She falls silent, and as I watch her, I see her brow furrow as if she herself is trying to puzzle out something complicated in her mind. Finally, she gazes back at me, her expression softening. "I suppose, in the end, it just comes down to your ability to forgive. Somehow you need to put aside your anger and listen to what he has to say." I snort and shake my head. "Easy for you to say." "I know that it won't be easy," she replies, "but it's the only thing that will give you peace. Anger is like mage fire in a way. It's difficult to control and it burns everything it touches, reducing it to ash. I don't want to see that happen to you." I continue to stare at the hot spring, my heart a tumult of emotion. A part of me knows that she's right, but I don't want to admit it, least of all to myself. Still gripping my hand, Zara continues. "So much is happening in this world right now," she says. "We've already been through a great deal, and I fear that we will face worse before this is all over. I guess I just also wanted to tell you that I'll always be there for you when you need a friend. You can always count on me, Owen." As if to emphasize her point, she squeezes my fingers, and for a moment it feels like everything that is wrong in the world has faded away, leaving the two of us alone, frozen in time. My mouth turns up involuntarily and I smile at her, truly grateful that whatever the future holds, we will face it together. She smiles back and takes a step closer, her eyes seeming to peer into the depths of my soul. I breathe in the fragrant smell of her hair, trying not to move so as not to spoil this moment. This time, the silence that settles between us doesn't feel awkward or uncomfortable. It feels perfect. In truth, I'm not sure how long we stand there. Eventually, the steam from the spring causes our clothing to become damp. A chilly wind gusts down from the mountains, blowing away the mist and causing both of us to shiver. Reluctantly, we begin to make our way back to the inn, only to find that the common room is almost empty, though Talon and a few of the guards are still dicing at one of the tables.
"We should probably go to bed," Zara says, rubbing her hands together. "Another long day of riding ahead of us and all that."
"Yeah," I agree. "Why don't you go up without me? I think I'll stay and chat with Talon for a while." She smiles and nods.
"All right, but don't stay up too late. I wouldn't want you falling asleep in your saddle. If that happens, I might just have to throw a rock at your head to wake you up."
Grinning, I say, "Good night, Zara," before walking over to Talon's table. She heads up the stairs without another word, disappearing up to the second floor.
"Done talking with your girlfriend?" Talon asks as I approach.
He picks up a mug and takes a long pull. I sit next to him and promptly drive my elbow into his side. This causes him to grunt and spill a little bit of his drink down the front of his tunic.
"She's not my girlfriend," I reply gruffly. "The two of us are just friends."
"Aye," he exclaims, setting down his mug and wiping himself off with his hands. "Hells, I was only joking. Light knows I'd be out talking to a pretty girl if there were anyone else besides these ugly louts."
When the guards all glare at him, he adds,
"No offense."
I chuckle but refuse the dice when one of the men tries to hand them to me. My training taught me that gambling was a waste of time and money. Elias may be a traitor, but that advice still seems rather sound to me, especially considering the amount of coin Talon has lost since we left the Ashwood together. I sit with them for a while, warming myself by the hearth and listening to the men as they talk and boast with one another about their time serving in the army. It isn't long, however, before I begin to grow bored with their conversation and opt to go to my room to get an early night. Bidding farewell to the others, I stand and make my way over to the staircase, walking up to the comforting darkness above. As I reach the second floor, I hear hushed voices coming from the hallway, and I pause before I get to the top, pressing myself against the wall and listening to what they're saying.
"I know those voices," I think to myself, trying to tune out the noise of the common room. "That's Zara and Elias. What are they talking about?"
"Did you speak with him?"
Elias asks, his deep voice pitched to almost a whisper.
"Yes," Zara replies begrudgingly, "but he's still closed off. Every time I approach the subject, he becomes guarded."
"The boy's as stubborn as his father was," he remarks. "He'll come around, but you'll need to keep pressing him."
"I won't do that," Zara says firmly. "Owen's hurting Elias. I'll not push him into doing anything that will cause him more pain."
"You must," Elias insists. "I need to speak to him, explain things. I need to make him understand."
"Then why don't you just approach him yourself?"
Elias grunts, frustration evident in his tone.
"The boy can hardly bring himself to look at me, let alone talk to me. I need you to convince him, to help him see reason. There are things he needs to know."
Zara sighs in exasperation.
"Then why don't you tell me? I can relay whatever message you wish to give him."
"No," Elias says, his voice growing even softer. "No, it needs to come from me."
There's a brief pause, and I lean a little closer to the edge, my heart pounding inside my chest. For an instant I worry that they've discovered I've been eavesdropping on them. But Zara soon breaks the silence, her tone more pensive than before.
Last time we spoke, you mentioned that you learned who our true enemy is. If I'm going to continue helping you, then I'd like to know who that is. It's only fair.
Elias grunts again.
The Nightingales I was with before I was captured, they claimed to have intelligence on the R'hllar. They were going to relay the information to the Protector before the King's men murdered them. Now, I'm the only one who knows.
He hesitates before continuing, then whispers,
Asmodeus, the Prince of Darkness, is trying to bring down the Ark.
Zara sucks in a breath.
Light? That can't be true.
It is, he replies gravely. The Nightingales captured someone, a cultist from that group known as the Harbingers. The rebels have certain methods to get people talking. I'm inclined to believe what they learned.
If this is true, then the Circle needs to be notified.
Indeed, Elias says. That's why we need to come together. We all need to come together. Powerful forces are trying to destroy the kingdom. We cannot afford to let this civil war continue on.
But that's the whole reason you're leading us to Dunmar City. King Æthelgar is trying to make peace with the Nightingales.
Elias snorts.
You're smarter than that, Zara. Æthelgar is about as trustworthy as a Darkhound. He says he wants peace, but there are other motives at play here. There always are when it comes to the king.
Zara is quiet for a moment, and I can almost picture her chewing on her lower lip in thought. Finally, she clears her throat.
I'll talk to Owen when the time is right, but you have to promise me that whatever message you want to give him won't antagonize him further. I won't let you hurt him any more than he already is.
Elias hesitates for only a second before responding,
I promise.
Good, she replies tersely. Now, if you don't mind, I really should be getting to bed.
Good night.
Footsteps sound on the floorboards as they ascend up and around the corner, signaling the end of their hushed conversation. A pair of doors opens and then closes, leaving the upstairs in complete silence. After waiting for several heartbeats to make sure that they're no longer in the hall, I make my way up the final few steps and walk stealthily to my room. In just a few short moments, my heart feels as heavy as an anvil.
Why was Zara talking with Elias? Is that the only reason why she wanted to speak with me outside? To convince me to make amends with my master? I feel foolish, cheated, before I take a deep breath to calm myself down. No, I think, sinking down onto my straw mattress. She's just trying to help. Hells, she probably thinks we'll be able to make up and everything will go back to normal.
I squeeze my eyes shut and lay back, rubbing my face hard as if to rub away the tension. Their words play again in my mind, turning over repeatedly until they jumble together. Through the confusion, one name stands out, separating itself from the rest like a red glowing fire.
Asmodeus, the Prince of Darkness.
It seems that at last I have a name to put to the enemy who has been pulling the strings. Everything that has happened so far, from Forest Hill to this very moment, points directly to this mysterious adversary. And by the sounds of it, we are ill-prepared to fight him.